Thank you very much, Honourable Minister Matt Lapeng, and thank you very much for those complimentary words about Irish aid. Obviously, we soak them up very gladly and very happily. But the truth is, of course, that it's actually the Basutu who have done Lesotho's work, not us. We merely assist and we try and support in every way we can. Thank you. I think maybe without. Maybe we'll leave questions if there's time, or I'll take some guidance. Maybe some questions now to Minister Michael Lapeng. Would that be okay, Minister? And it could be to Irish Aid, it could be to the Minister. Yes, please.
Good evening, everyone. I'm delighted to be here. And thank you very much, Minister, for that very good presentation. My name is Roisin, and I'm Irish, and I'm going to Lesotho next Friday week with the Port Marnock Group. We're going to Mazuru, and I will be in the classrooms teaching AIDS prevention. And I would very much like to get your opinion on what is being done and what we can do to help the children, particularly from 13 to 18-year-olds. This is my fourth time to go to South Africa and this area. I'd really like to hear what you have to say about it. Because we have this saying in Ireland, prevention is better than cure. So we would love to know how we can get across to these children. We'd love to help in their education, please.
Maybe one more question. Okay, please, Minister.
Thank you very much for that question. That, perhaps you know, is the hardest thing, prevention of HIV and AIDS. But I can assure you, we have, that is our priority since last year, prevention and behavioral change strategy. We are working together with the young people, and, not only through the film, we have young people now employed in the Ministry of Health, whose job is to talk to other young people. We are employing we are working together with the traditional chiefs, with the traditional people to be able to actually address some of the policy, some of the practices that we feel are harmful. And you know that we are all trying to roll out circumcision. While circumcision is acceptable in our country, but it's not really done properly. So we are trying to work together with the traditional chiefs. And hopefully by the end of this year, we'll have achieved something major, which is the traditional chiefs actually dictating who can be circumcised. And we might even pass a bill. Because what we need to do is to remove circumcision, traditional circumcision, and separate it from initiation. Because initiation by itself is a process. And the one, you know, and circumcision is but one small part of it. So what we are really, and I'm hopeful that we are going to win this one. What we are trying to do is to say every person who is part of the initiation process must come with a certificate to show the person has already been circumcised. The Republic of Botswana has done it successfully through the traditional chiefs, and our traditional chiefs later on will go to Botswana to go and learn how to do it well. We are also trying to adopt some of the less invasive way of circumcising, and hopefully less painful devices will be found that can be used by the people who are actually circumcising, so that we can circumcise large numbers of men. But when it comes to young people listen to other young people, and we are also a Christian country. As you know, the church plays a major role. We have the Archbishop as part of the Behavioral Change Strategy Group, the Archbishop, the Roman Catholic Archbishop. We have other people who are of other denominations, together with the traditional chiefs, coming together and agreeing with us on how best we should deal with these issues. So I believe we are doing a lot. We have films, and I've actually come with them to the embassy, and hopefully you will come to our ministry and we'll also share with you, and you will sit around the table with some of these young people. I'm looking forward to meeting the young people that you're going to be working with, as well as together with our young people, to see whether we cannot also have encourage a debate on
how to behave well, how to adopt other practices from other, from your own people who will be aware that condoms are used. Are you part of the group that will be coming with young people?
Yes.
Yes, 30 okay. 30 people, yes. The ones who will be building, and how many young people?
30
people. Yeah, I think that's a sizable number. A challenge. We could actually step it out of the school. We sometimes step out of the Catholic clinic, step out of the school, because immediately thereafter, wherever we're having the discussion, we should be able to talk about condoms in the school freely. Because the Prime Minister will have a talk anywhere and will not end that topic without talking about condoms, about circumcision, about testing. So it is important to talk about these issues. And the biggest challenge is our partner is the church in the clinics, our partner in the schools is the church. So that becomes a challenge. But the Ministry of Education has curricula on HIV and AIDS and reproductive health. It's ridiculous, in my opinion.
We're learning all the time. We're being told straight and frankly. But I think this just shows how good this lecture is. We're making partnerships there and working together for the same goal. I agree, prevention is good. Thank you so much for your work.
Yes.
Yeah,
the shortages of health workers. You clearly mentioned that. And then how do you use them intelligently with the limited resources, not in terms of number, but also in terms of infrastructure, the support mechanisms, and so on and so forth. So there are various ways and means to reach the sort of the end point, really. So while there's always a criticism and a challenge, how do we broaden our scope beyond one condition or one particular sort of disease to a broader health systems approach, and then using these health workers who are very scarce in number in any case, to give them the right kind of skill mix, to use these training facilities to broaden the curriculum so that they can provide more than one service at a given time, so that we utilize the opportunity to whenever the patient or community get in touch with the health worker, they get benefit for more than a particular condition for which they be presented. So I would like to basically see in your own country what kind of strategies you're planning to, or are you already adopting, but more importantly, how are you transforming the global funds in this approach towards a broader health system agenda?
Thank you. I think I'll make an example of the strategy that was adopted by Southern health ministers. It is, for instance, when we are treating, we have decided that the co-infectivity with TB and HIV and AIDS is so high that it is almost ridiculous to treat these two diseases separately. So what we do is, if you report and you are found to have TB, we are looking for HIV and AIDS immediately. And if you are HIV and AIDS, we are looking for TB. So the entry point is one. If people come in, and the most common point of entry in Africa is maternal and child health services. And at that point, the nurse offering those services has to be competent in almost everything. So I am here, it's a question of need. It's not even a question of whether this is an option. That nurse has to be competent. Has to be a nurse midwife who knows TB, who knows HIV and AIDS, who knows malaria, who knows everything. So, and who can test, and who has also some counseling skills of counseling a patient. So I think basically for us to say a nurse can only do this, this one can only do that, it's not even an option. There are few. One who is there is a master of all, everything. So that's what we do, and I think it is a little bit different. However, I think you've also heard of NEPI. NEPI is where we are the nurse assistants and others are being trained intensively in midwifery to focus on a particular disease. But they are already trained in other things. But the only thing is now they are really focusing on pregnant women and doing the right thing for them. However, you know, task shifting, everybody talks about task shifting. And I remember telling someone that, you know, everybody thinks this is a skill that you have to learn to task shift. No, task shifting happens because there is a need to do it, because there is no one else to do that. So you automatically have a role to do it. You have to do it. So task shifting is something that is done. Even in countries that are working in South Africa, task shifting is done. A nurse will deliver. A nurse will even perform emergency surgery in the mountains of Lesotho and emergency cesarean section if there is no one. And that has happened on many occasions. I don't know whether that adequately answers your question. We can take it further, Dr.
He seems to be happy for now. I'll take the last question, please, from the non-lady.
I have a question about, like as you said, the biggest problem would be HIV, of course. And most donors are mostly interested in funding activities in that area. But of course, there are other priorities as well. To what extent can you also use funding for instance, for reducing maternal mortality and also for non-communicable diseases like diabetes or hypertension?
Yes, you know, there's been a lot of criticism worldwide to say that there's a lot of money for HIV and AIDS, and maybe even TB, but not for non-communicable diseases. You know, I mean, the very same person who has HIV and AIDS has other things. Also, we're looking for hypertension, and most of them will have diabetes. So we piggyback on HIV and AIDS for everything. We piggyback there was even an attempt a few years back, those people who sat on the Global Fund, there was an attempt to actually incorporate maternal and child health services, whether it is World Bank Malaria or whether it's Global Fund, because majority of the people who will be seeking these services will be either having young children or will be pregnant or about to deliver. So we piggyback on the services, and I think it's a done thing. You do it without even thinking. You don't say, oh, no. Now I'm done with testing for HIV and AIDS. You are negative. Now we move on then to squares. Look for your hypertension elsewhere. No, the same person will be doing everything. So piggybacking on it is because every aspect, you are treating one person. Every person can have HIV and AIDS, whether the person has got fractured femur and is a kidney. You have got to know whether the person is HIV positive or hypertensive or diabetic. That's what you want to know. So basically, I think delineating and just saying this is for HIV, this is for TB, is academic.
Thank you so much, Minister. Exchange of ideas, I think a great communication of what the reality is in an African country, the challenges are. But sometimes I think we make things too difficult when we come from the outside. And in fact, the answers are very often there in the mountains of Lesotho or in the Thank you very much. I've been looking for some professor or something from RCSI that I can thank. I think I've just identified one at the back. Professor Rory, thank you very much for letting us have this lecture here in Haughty Surgeons. Thank you, Dr. David Wheatley, as well, the chair of my Global Health, for the work put into this. But really, the people I should thank, of course, Elaine Byrne and Aline Thurston, without which this would not have been.